Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive.
Today we are shrinking our perspective way down for a look at some of the most powerful yet tiniest entities in biology. We're diving deep into the world of viruses, and our guide is the foundational work of Dorothy H. Cryford.
That's right. And for most of us, I think the word virus immediately brings up, well, images of disease, right? Lockdowns, illness, invisible enemy. But Crawford's research really forces a complete rethink, a paradigm shift, you could say. So our mission today is to show you, based on her sources, that viruses aren't just about making us sick. They are everywhere. They're dynamic and actually fundamental drivers that have profoundly shaped how all life on Earth evolved.
That really does challenge the common view, doesn't it? If they're so fundamental, why do we almost always see them as just, well, destructive? Is that perception biologically fair, or is it just, focused on us humans? It's largely human-centric, yeah. Focused on the negative impacts to us. But understanding this dynamic conflict, what Crawford calls the biological arms race, it's absolutely essential, not just for grasping modern medicine and vaccines, but really the whole story of life on this planet. It's kind of an intellectual shortcut to understanding modern biology itself.
Okay, so guiding us through this complex microscopic world is Dorothy H. Cryford. Tell us a bit about her. Who is she, and what makes her perspective so valuable here?
Well, Professor Cryford is a real authority in virology. She's an emeritus professor of medical microbiology at the University of Edinburgh, a fellow of the Royal Society of Edinburgh. I mean, she has dedicated her career to studying these invisible entities.
And importantly, her research wasn't just general virology, was it? She's particularly known for her work on the Epstein-Barr virus, EBV, and its complex long-term relationship with us, especially its link to certain cancers, like Burkitt's lymphoma.
Exactly. That specific focus is key. Because she studies viruses that stick around, persist, sometimes integrating into us over decades, she gets the deep co-evolutionary dance. It's not just about the quick hit-and-run infections. She understands that long game between the virus and our immune system. And, crucially, she's both a top-tier scientist and a gifted communicator. She can take these really complex virology concepts and make them accessible, for anyone who's curious.
So her goal isn't to scare us, but more to reposition viruses, to see them as these fundamental drivers of evolution, maybe even necessary parts of the ecosystem.
Precisely. That's the core idea in her work, to elevate viruses beyond just being pathogens. She argues they are, in many ways, the most successful and influential biological entities on Earth, despite being so incredibly simple in their structure.
That simplicity is fascinating, isn't it, this paradox? How can something that sort of exists on the border between living and non-living be so successful?
Because they are the ultimate minimalists. Pure efficiency. Viruses don't have the internal machinery for, say, metabolism or making energy. That's why they're basically inert outside a host cell. Mm. But crucially, they have genetic material, DNA or RNA, and they evolve very, very rapidly. Mm. They're essentially just a set of instructions for making more of themselves, and they outsource all the actual work.
The ultimate outsourcing model. Total efficiency.
Right. And the book takes you from that basic molecular definition of what a virus is, all the way up to its huge impact on global evolution. The key insight is that this dynamic, ongoing conflict, this arms race between these minimalists and their hosts, going back millions of years, is actually the main force driving genetic innovation. It's why we have such sophisticated immune systems.
Okay, that sets the stage perfectly. Let's dive into the basics then, their structure. She uses that great analogy, right?
She does. She describes a virus particle, the virion, as simply a piece of bad news wrapped in a protein. The bad news is the genetic blueprint, the nucleic acid core, and the wrapping is the protein shell called the capsid. That's it. No internal organs, no energy factories, nothing like that.
And that term, obligate intracellular parasites, that's crucial here. They have to get inside a living cell. They outsource all the labor, hijack the cell's resources just to reproduce, and they infect everything, right? Not just us.
Everything.
Yeah.
Every known form of life. Plants, animals, bacteria, you name it. In fact, those viruses that infect bacteria, the bacteriophages, are probably the most numerous biological entities on the planet. They play a huge role in places like the oceans, regulating bacterial populations. We often overlook them.
Okay, so let's get into the mechanics. If they're so simple, why are they so hard to beat? Doesn't simplicity make them an easy target?
You'd think so, but actually, their simplicity allows for incredible speed and adaptability. The viral life cycle is just a masterclass in parasitic efficiency. Usually starts with attachment. The virus has proteins on its surface that act like keys, fitting into specific locks or receptors on a host cell. This key and lock fit determines which cells it can infect. That's called its tropism.
Okay, so like the flu virus targets lung cells specifically.
Exactly. Then, once attached, it needs to get inside. That's entry. They can trick the cell, maybe fuse directly with the cell membrane, or get engulfed by the cell through a process called endocytosis.
Like being swallowed whole.
Pretty much. Then comes uncoating, releasing its genetic material, that bad news, inside the cell. And then the real takeover begins, replication and gene expression. The viral genes immediately start bossing the cell around, forcing the host machinery, its ribosomes, its enzymes to mass-produce viral proteins and copy the viral genetic material. And this replication process, especially for RNA viruses, is often really sloppy, high error rate.
Which means lots of mutations.
Exactly. Constant variation. That's the raw material for evolution, allowing them to quickly adapt and evade our immune system.
And you mentioned retroviruses earlier, like HIV. They have that special enzyme.
Right. Reverse transcriptase. That's a key tool. Mm-hmm. It lets them convert their RNA genome back into DNA. And that viral DNA can then be stitched directly into the host cell's own DNA, integrated right into our chromosomes.
Wow. That sounds like a very long-term strategy.
It's the ultimate long-term strategy.
Yeah.
So once all the new viral parts are made, they assemble into new virus particles. Mm-hmm. And finally, release. This can happen relatively gently, through budding, where the new virus wraps itself in a piece of the host cell membrane on its way out. Or it can be brutal lysis, where the cell just bursts open, releasing hundreds of new viruses all at once.
That ability to integrate, to hide, that leads perfectly into the different lifestyles or business models viruses use for survival, which she details. You've got the quick ones and then the stairs.
Yeah, you have the acute or hit-and-run infections. Think influenza or the common cold. They replicate really fast, cause illness quickly, and then they're either cleared by the immune system or sometimes, unfortunately, they kill the host. Their whole strategy depends on transmitting efficiently and rapidly to the next person before the immune system catches up.
But then there are the persistent ones, the ones that are in it for the long haul.
Those are really impressive survivalists. They establish a long-term presence. This can be chronic, where the virus is constantly produced at low levels, maybe for years or even decades. HIV and hepatitis B or C are examples. And then there's the latent strategy. This is maybe the stealthiest approach. The virus essentially goes dormant. It hides its genetic material inside the host cell, sometimes integrated into our DNA, sometimes just existing as a separate little circle of DNA called an episome. The immune system might not even see it for long periods. Herpes viruses are the masters of this, the cold sores, or chickenpox virus, hiding out and then reactivating years later as shingles. Professor Crawford's own work on EBV falls squarely into this persistent, latent category.
And that ability to hide, to integrate, that links directly to something really serious. The connection between some viruses and cancer. Oncoviruses.
Yes, and Crawford is very clear here. Viruses usually don't cause cancer all by themselves. It's more complex. They act as crucial cofactors. They create conditions or provide triggers that can lead to a cell becoming cancerous down the line. And they generally do this through a couple of main molecular hijacking tricks.
Okay, what are those?
Well, method one involves that integration we talked about. When viral DNA inserts itself into our genome, it can sometimes land in a bad spot. It might disrupt one of our own critical genes that normally controls cell growth, like a tumor suppressor gene. It's like accidentally cutting the brakes on the cell cycle.
Okay, that makes sense. And the second method?
Method two is when the virus actively produces its own proteins called viral oncoproteins that interfere with the cell's normal control pathways. These viral proteins can essentially jam the accelerator pedal for cell division, pushing the cell towards uncontrolled growth.
So key examples here would be things like human papillomavirus, HPV, causing cervical cancer.
Exactly. And hepatitis B and C viruses, which are major causes of liver cancer.
But this is also where science has had a huge victory, right? The HPV vaccine.
Absolutely. The HPV vaccine is a fantastic success story. By preventing the initial viral infection, it prevents the downstream risk of cancer developing. It shows that understanding the viral trigger lets us intervene effectively. It's monumental public health.
It really is. So understanding these mechanisms is powerful. Now, looking ahead, Crawford talks about new viruses emerging, and she frames it not as some random bolt from the blue, but as an, what was the phrase?
An ecological inevitability.
Right. That phrase really sticks with you. Why inevitable?
It mostly comes down to zoonosis. That's the natural process of viruses jumping from animal reservoirs like bats, rodents, birds, into the human population. This has always happened. And the factors driving it are, if anything, increasing. Think about ecological changes. Deforestation, urbanization bringing us into closer contact with wildlife that carry these viruses. Add global travel to the mix, and a local spillover event in one part of the world can become a global threat almost overnight.
And underpinning all of this is that high mutation rate we mentioned, especially in RNA viruses, giving them constant potential to adapt to new hosts, like us.
Precisely. Which brings us to something like antigenic shift in the influenza virus. This is particularly dangerous.
How does that work, exactly?
Antigenic shift happens when two different strains of influenza virus infect the same cell, say in a pig or a bird.
Mm-hmm.
Inside that cell, their genetic segments, they have segmented genomes, can get mixed up and reassorted like shuffling cards. If a new virus emerges with a combination of surface proteins, antigens, that human immune systems have never seen before, then nobody has immunity. That's how you get the potential for a major pandemic, like we saw several times in the 20th century.
Okay, so putting all this together, it really changes how you think about viruses and maybe even how you react to health news. What are the main takeaways, the core messages that shift our perspective?
I think the first big one is appreciating the co-evolutionary arms race. This constant back and forth, this biological battle between viruses and their hosts has been shaping our genes and theirs for millions of years. Our incredibly complex immune system, with its ability to remember past infections, that's largely a product of this ongoing war.
It's amazing to think our own biology is partly written by these ancient conflicts.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And second, maybe even more startling, is that viruses are essential drivers of life. They're not just destructive. We mentioned bacteriophages regulating ocean ecosystems.
Yeah.
But even more profoundly, elements derived from viruses have actually become embedded in our own genome and now perform vital functions for us.
Wait, like the placenta example, that sounds incredible. A virus helped build the placenta.
It really is one of the most amazing stories in evolution. Genetic remnants from an ancient retroviral infection millions of years ago gave rise to a protein called syncytin. This protein is absolutely essential for the formation of the placenta in mammals. It helps fuse cells together to create the barrier between mother and fetus, allowing nutrient exchange while protecting the fetus from the mother's immune system.
So complex mammalian life, our very existence, depends partly on a genetic gift from an ancient virus.
In a very real sense, yes. We carry this viral heritage within us, enabling our own complexity. It forces you to see them not just as enemies.
Definitely. Okay, what's the third theme?
The third theme is perhaps more hopeful. The triumph of scientific intervention. Despite the power and adaptability of viruses, human ingenuity, science, and cooperation achieved the complete global eradication of smallpox. An ancient and terrible disease wiped out. It proves it's possible. It provides a blueprint, a model for how understanding the enemy allows us to build defenses like vaccines and public health measures to protect ourselves against inevitable future threats.
That's a powerful message. So let's pull out some of the most memorable ideas or quotes that really capture these concepts.
Well, that core idea of their efficiency is captured perfectly in the line. A virus is the epitome of parasitic minimalism. It is nothing more than a set of instructions for its own replication, outsourcing the entire machinery of life. It just nails that streamlined, ruthless power.
It really does. And then the big evolutionary bombshell. Without viruses, complex life as we know it would not exist. That just turns everything upside down. They're builders, in a way, not just wreckers.
Exactly. And finally, that crucial message about being prepared, not surprised. The emergence of a new pandemic is not a random catastrophe, but an ecological inevitability driven by the collision of viral evolution with human expansion into the natural world. It shifts the focus from shock to vigilance, you know, understanding the drivers.
Okay, so moving from these big ideas to everyday life, how does knowing all this actually help you, the listener? How does it apply?
Well, first, it gives you a much deeper understanding of your own health and medicine. You now get why vaccines work. They aren't magic. They specifically train your immune system's memory cells to recognize that viral key we talked about so your body's ready for the real thing. And you also understand with total clarity why antibiotics are completely useless against viruses. Antibiotics target bacterial structures and processes. Viruses don't have those. They use your cell's machinery. Different enemy, different weapon needed.
That's so important. And it also helps you make sense of the news, right? When there's an outbreak, you hear terms like herd immunity or mutation, antigenic drift, zoonosis.
Yeah.
They stop being just scary jargon. You can actually place them within the context of the virus's life cycle, its strategies, its origins.
Yeah.
It allows for a more informed personal risk assessment instead of just, you know, panic.
For sure. And for me personally, it fosters a real appreciation for the invisible world, the constant dynamic battle happening inside us all the time. You move beyond a simple fear of germs to a genuine respect for the complexity of microbial ecology and the absolute genius of our immune system.
Yeah, I agree. For me, what really stood out was reframing the smallpox eradication story, seeing it not just as a past victory, but as this powerful testament to what science and global cooperation can achieve against these tiny, powerful adversaries. It proves we can win these battles. It offers real evidence-based hope, I think.
Absolutely. And I think the lasting insight, the main thing to take away, is that necessary paradigm shift. We really have to move beyond seeing viruses solely as pathogens, as enemies. We need to acknowledge them as ancient participants in the story of life, as co-authors of our own evolution, and as these incredibly powerful engines of biological change. Understanding them, really understanding them in this deeper way, isn't just scientifically fascinating. It's fundamentally about understanding life itself, and it's our best tool for navigating the future.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.